My name is Brent Weinbach, and I am a certified public accountant.
Do you know anything about accounting?
I like doing my taxes.
Yeah? And you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it.
Yeah. What was enjoyable about it?
I just love crunching numbers.
Do you?
That's not the only thing I crunch.
Everyone say hello to Brent Weinbach. We'll be talking with him today about his life, his comedy, and his new special. Welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven.
I kind of decided to stop doing my taxes myself recently, but I used to do them all the time myself. By all the time, I mean until recently.
Yes. There is something that is weirdly enjoyable about like getting organized and like looking things over. And
well, I liked kind of seeing how much, you know, I spent on this and the, you know, I don't know, just totaling all my expenses and how much I made and stuff like that. I don't know. I like the statistics, I guess.
Yeah.
Of it.
Do you, are you like an analytical person? Do you look at, do you approach joke writing that way too?
Yeah, to some degree. Yeah.
Do you have like spreadsheets for your jokes?
No, not spreadsheets, but, I do have, I don't know. I've gone about writing jokes different ways, but sometimes the approach is, you know, it's very much a scripted thing where I'll write it out and I'll kind of try to estimate when the laugh points will be and have those written in what I'm writing in the notebook or whatever. So I'll have a, you know, a phrase and then I'll put brackets and say laugh here and then, you know, continue on with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is some sort of some calculation that's involved. But then other times I'll just have a concept for a bit and then I'll kind of do a loose version of it on stage until it becomes something a little more scripted, I guess. Yeah.
Whenever I used to substitute teach high school in Oakland, California, and I used to do that for a living, I would oftentimes come across the phrase, "Hell nah, hell nah." Oh, hell nah, hell nah. The following is an example of when I might have found this phrase used. Oh, Mr. Weinbach, can I go my locker real quick? Hell nah, hell nah. Now go back to your seat. Substitute teaching high school in Oakland, California. I got abused by the students on a daily basis. I got yelled at. I got things thrown at me. Sometimes students criticized my pants for being worn too tightly. Ah, look at little tight-ass pants he got on. Sup, Mr. Pants? Mr. Pants! Wah, 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 wah! Motherfucker looking like Spider-Man and Snip. But your pants doing too much. Look like you wear your little brother's pants. Motherfucker wearing hand-me-ups and shit. You feel me? Man, your pants so tight, you fucking up my sperm count. Oh, yeah? Your pants are so baggy, it looks like you have a really big, curvy penis. Go to the office. And so, to avoid ridicule and blend in more with the students, instead of wearing tight pants to school, I then wore cut-off jean shorts.
Like, I do like to analyze things sometimes, but not in the moment when I'm enjoying enjoying it or whatever. You know what I mean?
Balance.
Or I only like after the fact, I think analysis is good, you know?
Hearing Brent talk about analysis, I wondered if that would play into his retelling of some of his influences and his younger comedy career.
Well, I think, you know, I think it started when I basically wrote a song where all the lyrics were only the words pee-pee and poo-poo, and I wrote that when I was 4 years old.
Yeah,
and,
I still do that today.
So do I, you know. I think my sense of humor hasn't really changed since then. But I remember singing that song at a supermarket. and with my I was with my mother.
What supermarket?
It was I think it was probably Ralph's. And this woman overheard me singing, and she said to my mother, "Well, at least he's musical." So there you go. That was and that's how I got into it. Yeah. No, I don't know. I was well, you know, I always wanted to do it. In you know, from watching a lot of stand-up. I used to watch stand-up comedy all the time in the 80s and 90s. And then
any people in particular or just anything you get your
Well, yeah, pretty much anything. I watched everything. I could, you know, A&E, Evening at the Improv, Russell Simmons' Dev Comedy Jam, pretty much anything. The comics that stood out to me the most were comedians who were a little more visceral, I guess. So specifically Rowan Atkinson, who, I don't know, one maybe might not might argue that he's not a stand-up comedian, but, well, when I saw his special on HBO that was Rowan Atkinson Live, you know, I'd seen other specials on HBO, and so I consider that to be stand-up as well, even though I guess they're more sort of like just pieces that he would do.
Performances.
Performance pieces.
All right, come on, settle down, please. Answer your names. Anus. Ass bandit. Bottom. Clitoris. Where are you, clitoris? Doo-doo. Enema. Fist up. Come on, grow up, please. Genital. I'm sorry, genital.
He was one of the biggest influences. Charles Fleischer. You know, just again, like using a lot of music and funny voices and stuff, and so just a lot of visceral elements.
We tools may act idiotic, but we're not stupid.
Who framed Roger Rabbit?
And Harry Basil, who again did a lot of visual humor, you know.
All right, boys and girls, I'm your new kindergarten teacher, Mr. Kimball. I'm going to read you all a story so everybody lie on the floor. Do it! Once upon a time, there were three bears...
I always wanted to do stand-up comedy since I was a kid, and then I eventually just, in college, started... Actually, even at the end of high school, was thinking about it and kind of trying to write material, and then in college I started messing around a little bit more with it. It wasn't until like after college that I started getting serious about it and just going to open mics, but it wasn't really anything revelatory or anything. I mean, I just, a friend of mine had been doing stand-up comedy for a little bit who I knew in college, and I followed him around to some different shows around town. I was based in San Francisco at the time, and he and I just forced myself to just start going to open mics. It wasn't a particularly, you know, interesting story.
No,
but as far as doing absurd stuff and visual stuff, it was kind of I always did that and always kind of, I guess, wanted to emulate some of the people that I really liked watching stand-up comedy. So, you know, those people I mentioned. And so, yeah, I was already kind of doing visceral stuff in the beginning. And then as I continued to do stand-up comedy, I just more and more was realizing that it was the visual kind of stuff, or the visual and sort of sonic stuff that I was doing that I was getting the most fulfillment out of, and that I felt, you know, expressed me the most, you know?
Sometimes people criticize me for acting too creepy on stage. What if I acted like this?
Oh.
What do you get when you cross a kitten with a puppy? Two meals for the price of one. Schnuzzle. What's the difference between ice cream and a bucket of seven heads? I don't like ice cream. Hello, miss. How are you? You smell well nice.
Meet me in the woods tonight.
You know what the problem with poo-poo is? God made it delicious. So I'm single and I
Today's episode of the CISO C Show is brought to you by Casper. Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Supportive memory foams create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. And Casper offers free shipping and returns to US and Canada. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. You can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/CISO and using offer code CISO. That's S-E-E-S-O. And if you don't prefer the risk-free trial, there's always the high-risk trial. It involves a luge, 4 weeks in the outback, basic survival skills, and day trading on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Once again, get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/CISO and using offer code CISO. That's S-E-E-S-O. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, let's see. You know, I'd been wanting to do this show for, well, I've been wanting to shoot a special for a while, but just wasn't really finding the right place to do it or the right opportunity to do it. And, I did this Edinburgh Festival, in 2014 and basically did the same exact show that's in the special, for the most part. And I kind of treated it more like a one-man show in a way because all the bits, I kind of picked a lot of the best bits from around the first 10 years of my stand-up comedy and kind of tied them together with a common theme. And so that's why I kind of had almost a one-man show element, just because they're all kind of thematically similar. And yeah, I did it, you know, about 30 shows in Edinburgh. And then I thought, oh, this is the special right here. If I was mm-hmm. going to do a special, this would be.
Again, I don't know if I want to harp too much on the yeah. sort of like intellectual side
or
overthinking
yeah.
side, but it really does feel like, even in the sense of like, I'm going to look at the past 10 years and find the best jokes and compile them around a
theme. That's the thing. Like, it wasn't even like the past, it wasn't the past 10 years. It was the first 10 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it was like, I was just looking at more of the first, or I was just realizing that
like
a lot of the
best
bits,
of, kind of.
It was like a best of, but I also was realizing that they were all kind of linked to each other thematically. So there were a lot of more recent like material from like the last several or 5 years or whatever that I wasn't even drawing from, you know? Maybe a couple bits here and there, but most of it was all kind of from these earlier years, I guess, if you want to say, or like the first 10 years.
Yeah.
And they just happened to be, a lot of the best bits happened to be, you know, kind of similar thematically, yeah.
And you still found them enjoyable enough.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. In fact, I guess it had been such a long time that since I had performed them that it was new for a lot of people, you know? And so it kind of breathed new yeah. life into those bits, I guess. A good joke can it doesn't need to necessarily rely on the element of surprise, which was the debate. Once there's no surprise punchline, then you can't really do the joke again. Well, I think that if there's other qualities that are part of the joke, visceral qualities, it's those visceral qualities that will make the joke retellable yeah. or re-listenable appreciatable yeah. or whatever. In fact, sometimes if you know the punchline, it'll add a lot more dimension to the joke. For example, one of my favorite comedians when I started in San Francisco that I would watch a lot locally was Arj Barker. I think he's one of the best comedians, mm-hmm. you know, of all time. And he has some really long, drawn-out bits with this one punchline. And if you know the punchline, you start to see all these other details from the first, you know, leading up to the punchline that add so much more and add so much more to the rewatchability of it.
You'll watch like a movie multiple times.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
and you'll watch funny scenes from a movie. So if there's a funny, especially bits with act outs, mm-hmm. you know, or funny voices and stuff, or funny body movements, those I think definitely you can watch over and over again, and you want to watch over and over again. You're not having to do any math in your head to get a joke or understand something. You just are just purely experiencing it without any thinking, and that's something pure about that. So I think that's also why, you know, visceral elements can be really important to stand-up comedy.
Totally. I think I really relate to that, actually. I'd never thought about it in those words, but I came from a background of music. So, one of the things I always tried to
me
do
too.
Yeah, is yeah. like as a cheat, you know, music can really move people or can put you in a space prepared. Like this combination of chords mm-hmm. will make you start feeling a certain way before there's any lyrics sung on top of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think similarly with comedy, there's great opportunities to sort of craft an experience. And it sounds like that's what you are aiming to do as well.
Yeah. So I think that the headiness comes into play prior to the performance and then maybe afterwards, you know, but yeah. during it, it should just be a pure experience. Or it could, I guess the headiness can go, can kind of be present with the performer, but as far as audiences goes, the aim is to just intellectualize on it later after the show, but in the moment, just don't think. Just
you're not
respond.
Doing the oh, that's clever. You can't help but laugh because
that's the idea. That's the goal, at least, you know?
Yeah. Which, and some of my favorite jokes are me going, oh, that's clever. You know,
yeah,
but there is something special about just a guffaw that you can't contain.
There's a different kind of laugh, you know, when something's clever, it tickles your brain, and, you know, but I feel like, and you kind of, and you laugh, but I feel like you know, when there is these visceral kind of qualities that you can't put into words, that's what I feel like, that's what gets the real hard laughs coming, you know? And like I said, it's not even that the material needs to be visceral, but even a comedian's persona can make that visceral quality happen, you know? Just the way that they say the words, you know, or the way that they deliver, the way they express themselves, that's what's going to create a really, you know, guttural response. And that's why I always say that, you know, the material is always, for me, material is just 20% of stand-up comedy, and 80% of it is the delivery and how you present it, I think. That's the most important thing. You could talk about anything and make it really funny if you say it in a funny way, you know.
So you have a new special coming out.
The special is called Appealing to the Mainstream. I guess to elaborate on that title, just the theme is sort of the idea of sort of me adjusting myself in order to appeal to a broader crowd in different ways. So that's sort of the unifying theme of the special, appealing to the mainstream.
If someone was on the fence about checking out your special, is there something you might say to convince them to try it?
Well, I mean, I'm looking. You think I look swole now? Check me out on the special. I did a lot of crunches for that one, a lot of number crunches for that one. So I don't know if that entices you. Well, I guess there's. I feel like I'm giving it away too much, but. No, there's definitely a reason to check out the special because but I don't want to say it. There's a secret reason, and if people notice it, that's going to be really cool. It's going to be cool for you.
And where else can people find you online?
I have lots of video stuff on YouTube, youtube.com/Brent Weinbach, where you can check out a short film I made called I Don't Dance that I spent a lot of time on that I'd love for people to see. That's on Vimeo. So if you go to vimeo.com/Brent Weinbach, you can find it there. I Don't Dance is the name of the short. And actually, it also co-stars another CISO special person, Fahim Anwar. But he's really good. He steals the show.
I like to think that he's a special person.
He's a special person, yeah. And he steals the show.
And a special person.
He's a special person and a special person.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much, Andrew. Yeah.
And thank you for listening. As always, you can find us on Twitter at CISO Show. That's SEESO Show. I'm at Andrew Steven on Twitter. And CISO is at CISO TV. Hope you have a great week. Until next time. Bye.